Sarah looked up at the ramshackle house, a feeling of unease churning in her stomach. The building stood stark and alone in the middle of the dusty plains, like the last rotting tooth in the gums of an old man. Sarah glanced back down the highway that cut through the barren landscape. It was utterly deserted. Somewhere, beyond the low hills that shimmered in the hazy distance, her truck, that useless pile of rusted junk, was broken down at the side of the road. Sarah and her boyfriend Mike had trudged for miles in search of a gas station, or at least a house with a phone. But there was nothing. Just the highway and the dusty brown fields that stretched from horizon to horizon. And then, this house. Sarah had been so relieved when she first spotted the building, but as she drew closer, that relief had been replaced by a creeping sense of dread. The house was a mess, a rough patchwork of grey wood and crudely boarded broken windows. The front yard was thick with dead weeds, littered with scraps of metal, and the twisted, rusting skeletons of long-dead farm machinery. Mike had marched across this yard with a purpose and bravado Sarah knew was an act. And now here they were, standing on the sagging porch while the house creaked ominously in the wind. The pair glanced at each other. Then Mike leaned forward and knocked on the door. The real-life Leatherface. A bite-sized fright. This series contains disturbing content. Listener discretion is advised. There was no answer. Slightly anticlimactic, Sarah thought. Mike knocked again, louder this time. They waited. Nothing. No approaching footsteps, no sound of movement from within the dilapidated house. Mike sighed with frustration. He looked tired, worn out and dusty. Sarah could empathize. Her throat was scratchy and dry. Her feet throbbed with pain from the long trudge along the highway. "I'll go around the back," Mike said wearily. "Maybe they're working outside or something. You stay here. Keep knocking." Sarah nodded and watched as Mike stomped off round the corner of the house and out of sight. She stood still for a long moment, listening to the crickets chirping in the dead grass. Goosebumps formed on the skin of her bare arms and legs. God, this place gave her the creeps. But they needed help. Any port in a storm and all that. Sarah reached out and knocked once more on the peeling paint of the front door. To her surprise, it swung open under her fist, creaking on rusty hinges. A gloomy, old-fashioned hallway was revealed beyond. Sarah's heart was suddenly racing, her hands clammy with cold sweat. She gingerly poked her head through the door and called out, as loudly as she dared, to see if anyone was home. There was no response. Sarah took a few tentative steps inside, twisted floorboards creaking beneath her feet. The inside of the house was in a similar state to its exterior, ancient wallpaper peeled from the walls like flaps of dead skin. A greasy layer of dust and grime clung to every surface. An awful smell rose up to meet Sarah. Rotten meat and unwashed bodies, thick and fetid. A sudden gust of wind outside slammed the front door shut behind her. Sarah's heart nearly leapt clean out of her chest. She took a few deep breaths to steady herself, then called out again. No reply. Just the relentless creaking of the old house and the steady drip, drip of a leaking tap somewhere in a back room. Enough was enough. This place was disgusting. It was time to go. They'd walk all through the night to the next town if they had to, but they weren't staying here. Sarah turned to leave, but a small scraping sound behind made her pause. She glanced back over her shoulder. Mike stood in the doorway at the end of the hall. He was white as a sheet, face glistening with sweat. Sarah opened her mouth to ask him what was wrong, but he frantically waved at her to be quiet, placing a shaking finger to his lips. His eyes were huge, round with fear. Sarah took a small step towards him. She became dimly aware of a new sound growing rapidly nearer, the chugging of a small engine, like a motorcycle or a... Oh God. A monstrous figure appeared in the doorway behind Mike. Sarah caught a jumbled glimpse of great, meaty arms, a bulging belly behind a blood-stained butcher's apron, tiny piggy eyes glinting in a doughy face that was covered by a strange sort of leathery mask. But her attention quickly focused on the man's hands. He was clutching a chainsaw that roared and shrieked, puffing out clouds of blue-gray smoke. Mike wheeled around. Far too late. The masked monster rammed the chainsaw into his stomach. Mike screamed in agony as the steel teeth ripped him open, sending gouts of blood and chunks of flesh spattering across the walls. He tried to grab the spinning blade, push it from his body. Sarah saw severed fingers drop to the floor. She stood, frozen in numb incomprehension of what she was seeing. The chainsaw engine howled as its masked wielder thrust forward again. The whirring blade suddenly burst out of Mike's back in a shower of gore and splintered bone. The monstrous attacker wrenched the weapon free. It came loose with a meaty, sucking slurp, and Mike crumpled to the ground in a boneless heap. The killer's misshapen, masked head turned slowly, those glinting eyes coming to rest on Sarah. That broke the spell. She fled, turning on her heel and crashing through the front door. She stumbled out onto the porch, head whirling. No point running for the highway. It was too exposed, too far from any sort of rescue. No, she needed to hide or fight. She needed a weapon. Making a snap decision, Sarah leapt down the porch steps and ran to the right, around the house. She could hear heavy, thudding footsteps behind her, the sputtering roar of the chainsaw as it tried to shake loose the clinging flesh that clogged its metal teeth. Sarah tore through the yard, rough grass and dead weeds scratching at her bare legs. She rounded the house, clattered up the back steps and through a filthy screen door that hung drunkenly from one hinge. She skidded to a halt. She was in the kitchen, the source of the hideous stench that she had noticed in the hallway. The room looked like a slaughterhouse. Chunks of unidentifiable meat in various stages of decay littered the table and hung from hooks in the ceiling. The sink was full of bloody water, surrounded by gore-smeared rags and splintered bones that looked like they'd had the marrow sucked right out of them. There was no time to dwell on the nightmare scene. Sarah snatched up a rusted carving knife that lay on the filthy table and scanned about wildly for a hiding place. Too late. A hand, impossibly strong, seized Sarah by the hair and lifted her clean from the ground. She spun desperately, trying to face the monstrous, bloated killer. The huge man was laughing, a horribly childlike giggle seeming so at odds with his bulbous body. Sarah stared into his tiny, soulless eyes and realized with horror that his mask was made of skin, scraps of human faces crudely sewn together. She screamed with a mix of fear and disgust and buried her knife deep in the man's chest. He appeared not to notice. He kept on giggling and grunting, holding her high off the ground. He started to walk forwards, and Sarah twisted to glance over her shoulder. An empty iron meat hook hung from the ceiling a few feet away. Sarah screamed again, wrenched the knife free and plunged it down, this time into the doughy flesh where the killer's thick neck met his shoulder. The knife handle broke off in her fist. The huge man smiled with slack, wet lips behind his grotesque mask, unfazed by the blade jutting from his neck. He raised Sarah high with both hands. His shrill giggling filled her ears, and then he brought her crashing down, impaling her on the meat hook. As blood poured down onto the kitchen floor, the bloated, masked monster took a step back, surveying Sarah with the air of a man who has just hung a fine painting on his study wall. That terrifying tale was of course inspired by the iconic slasher horror film, The Texas Chainsaw Massacre. Released in 1974, the movie quickly gained a cult following, and laid the foundations for a dozen other legendary horror franchises to follow. The Texas Chainsaw Massacre also introduced audiences to Leatherface, the monstrous, chainsaw-wielding maniac who is the primary killer in the movie. He was the first in a list of other iconic, instantly recognizable cinematic slayers that went on to include the likes of Freddy Krueger in Nightmare on Elm Street, Jason Voorhees in Friday the 13th, and Michael Myers in Halloween. However, Leatherface himself was inspired by a real person, a depraved, cannibalistic killer whose crimes shocked the world. A man named Edward Theodore Keene. On the 16th of November 1957, police officers were summoned to a hardware store in Plainfield, Wisconsin, to investigate the disappearance of the owner, Bernice Warden. Her son Frank had arrived at the store earlier that morning to find his mother missing and bloodstains on the floor. He told the police that the last customer they had had the night before was a local man named Ed Keene, a strange loner who lived in a ramshackle farmhouse on the edge of town. Keene was quickly arrested at a nearby grocery store, and officers were dispatched to search his farm. What they discovered there would haunt them for the rest of their days. The headless body of Bernice Warden was found hanging upside down from the ceiling of Keene's shed. She had been dressed out like a deer, slit open with her organs removed. The horrified deputies pressed on into the stinking hovel, where they found a veritable treasure trove of Keene's grisly souvenirs. Aside from piles of bones, they found furniture made from human skin, chair coverings, a waste paper basket, even a lampshade stitched together from the remains of a woman's face, bowls and cups fashioned from human skulls, severed noses, lips and fingertips scattered throughout the house. They found Bernice Warden's head in a sack and her heart in a pot on the stove. Then the detectives made perhaps their most chilling discovery. Keene had been making clothes from human skin. Leggings, a corset, a belt, an apron, and a variety of masks. Skin carefully peeled from the faces of his victims to be cured into leather and draped over Keene's own twisted features. It is easy to see where Tobe Hooper, the director of the Texas Chainsaw Massacre, got his inspiration for the human skin mask-wearing cannibal Leatherface. Upon questioning, Keene spoke at length about his bizarre childhood, his useless drunk of a father, and his strict, domineering, ferociously religious mother, Augusta. Keene had always been very close to her, and, after his father died of heart failure, and his older brother was killed in a rather suspicious accident on their farm, mother and son formed an unhealthy, obsessive bond. When Augusta died in 1945, Keene was devastated. It was here that his true insanity was revealed. He devoted his life to her memory, sealing off her rooms to keep them pristine, while he lived in utter squalor in the kitchen of their crumbling shack. He confessed to extensive grave robbing, sneaking into the local cemetery in the dead of night to exhume the corpses of women he thought resembled his dead mother. He would take the bodies home, dress them in his mother's clothes, and speak to them as though they were alive. When the skeletal remains of these women became too decomposed, Keene would dispose of them and go in search of another grave to desecrate. He started to skin the corpses he was digging up, tanning their skin to make his gruesome decorations. In his own words, he wanted to create a woman suit that he could crawl inside, to literally become his mother. The investigating sheriff found Keene's repulsive confession so disturbing that he reportedly flew into a blind rage and attacked the murderer in his cell, repeatedly slamming his face and head into a brick wall. The sheriff died of heart failure at age 43, just before Keene's trial. The gruesome, traumatic horrors he had witnessed during the investigation sending him to an early grave. Keene was eventually sentenced to life in a mental institution, convicted of 2 murders and numerous counts of grave robbing. However, it seemed that not all the body parts found in his house belonged to Bernice Warden, or the corpses he had exhumed, so he remained a suspect in many other local unsolved disappearances of women and girls, as well as the murder of his brother. Geen became known as the Plainfield Ghoul, or more commonly, the Butcher of Plainfield. He died in 1984, aged 77, though, for better or worse, his legacy lives on in the countless books, films, and television programs his sickening crimes inspired. Aside from Leatherface, Geen's influence can be found in a host of other iconic horror characters. His unhealthy, obsessive relationship with his mother was the inspiration behind Norman Bates, the killer in Alfred Hitchcock's classic slasher film, Psycho. Bates keeps the mummified corpse of his beloved mother in the cellar of his motel, whilst committing a string of bloody murders wearing her clothes and wig, seemingly under her influence. Geen's crimes also formed part of the inspiration for the character of Buffalo Bill in the novel and infamous film adaptation of The Silence of the Lambs by Thomas Harris. Buffalo Bill is a serial killer who murders his female victims and then carefully skins them in order to make himself a woman suit. He is obsessed with becoming a woman himself and sees this grisly costume as his only way to complete this transformation, rather like Geen and his real-life desire to become his mother. The list of Geen-based entertainment goes on, including a series of American Horror Story and films such as The House of 1,000 Corpses and The Devil's Rejects. Sadly, his gruesome infamy has also inspired real-life copycat killers. On the 6th of January 1999, the crew of a tugboat were guiding their vessel through the stretch of the Vistula River that passes through the city of Krakow in Poland. Something snagged in their propeller blades. Crew members were sent to investigate. They found what appeared to be a bloated, pale sack of some sort. Then someone spotted a human ear attached to the stinking material, which was, on closer inspection, revealed to be the skin of 23-year-old student Katarzyna Zovada. The skin had been carefully removed, cut at the neck and thighs, then neatly stitched back together to form a macabre suit. An autopsy revealed it was quite possible Katarzyna had been alive when the skinning began. Her leg was discovered near a hydroelectric dam a week later. The rest of her body has never been found. The police feared they had a potential serial killer on their hands, someone attempting to imitate murders from The Silence of the Lambs. A furious nationwide manhunt began. Then, on the 31st of May 1999, Krakow police received a distressing phone call from an elderly man who lived in a village just outside the city. He claimed a second gruesome murder had taken place, that there was a body in his house, and that his own grandson was the vicious killer. Police descended on the house in force. In the basement, they found the headless corpse of a man hanging from the ceiling. The head they found outside, completely devoid of skin. They promptly arrested the young man who lived at the property, a Russian immigrant called Vladimir. It was soon discovered that the corpse in the basement was Vladimir's own father, whom he had murdered, beheaded, and then flayed in order to make a grotesque skin mask. Vladimir had worn this mask, along with his father's clothes, for a full day in front of his elderly grandfather, who, with his failing vision, could not tell the difference between his son and his grandson wearing the fleshy remains of his face. Some reports even state Vladimir was wearing his grisly skin mask and dancing wildly to pop music when the police arrived, in a hideous recreation of the infamous Buffalo Bill scene from The Silence of the Lambs. However, in a shocking twist, it was later revealed that Vladimir's DNA did not match traces found on Katarzyna's remains. He had murdered his father, worn his skin, but had not killed the girl. It seemed impossible to the police. Two separate mad butchers who skinned their victims, living in one city. Katarzyna's case soon went cold. However, in 2017, a man named by the police simply as Robert J. was arrested in Krakow in connection with the murder and mutilation of the young student. As of July 2020, his trial is still ongoing, and its details have been kept highly secret. Whatever the outcome of the trial, the similarities between this horrific case and the house of horrors Ed Gein had created for himself are undeniable. It seems the extent to which Gein's crimes influenced these Polish skin-suit murders will never be properly revealed. What do you think? People can be driven to murder by rage, love, jealousy, greed, boredom even. But what force of insanity drives someone to skin their victims afterwards? Or, in some cases, while they are still alive? What kind of person feels the need to make clothes or furniture out of human leather? We would love to hear your own thoughts and ideas about these stomach-turning stories. If you have enjoyed this episode, please follow us on Twitter and Instagram at PixelElixir, and subscribe at BitesizedFrights.com so that you never miss any of our terrifying tales. This has been a Pixel Elixir production, narrated by Chris Kay. Thank you for listening. Until the next bite, my friends.